On August 16, 1977, something happened in Memphis, Tennessee. It was either the death of Elvis Presley at the age of 42, as more than 80% of Americans believe, or the start of something most spectacular, a disappearing act in the biggest in the history of mankind. Well, this week, as fans mark the 40th anniversary of the King of Rock and Roll's passing, those who believe that Presley is still alive will have a golden opportunity to make their case, or rather cases, that Elvis is alive. These theories are as varied as they are plentiful, and they've been circulating since just after his death. In a moment, Corey Cooper joins us as we talk about the 40th anniversary of Elvis's death and some amazing stories about Elvis Presley. And welcome back to Coast, Corey Cooper with us, Elvis historian, a frequent source for books, radio shows, movies, and television projects about Elvis Presley and his life and his music. Corey has a wealth of friends and contacts in the Elvis world that includes authors, performers, friends, and members of the Memphis Mafia, that close group of friends and employees that worked with and protected Elvis Presley every day of his life, even though he was very difficult to protect in some cases. Corey, back on Coast to Coast, I think it was about, 8 years ago, Corey? Was it that long?
It has been a long time, George. Thanks for having me back on.
Good to have you, and what a fascinating moment. I can't believe 40 years have clipped by already. Unbelievable.
40 years. Can you believe that? You know, and like everybody says, they remember where they were at when they heard that sad news. And where were you at, George?
I was in Detroit, Michigan. And it was, I think we had heard about it in the afternoon, didn't we?
Yeah, it would have been about, it would have been late afternoon when the first came.
Around 5, 6 o'clock?
Yeah.
Something like that. And I was home, and I was just prepared to go into work at a TV station, and lo and behold, what a horrible story. But here's the big question to you. Is he dead, Corey?
Sad to say, but yes, Elvis passed away on that August 16th day.
Why do people try to keep the guy alive?
Well, you know what it is, George? I mean, you look at Elvis and you see certain times during his career, you see him in the Aloha from Hawaii special, you see him in the Singer special from 68 in that black leather. You know, he's vibrant, he looks perfect, you know, he's in the great outfits, he's singing the tunes, he's got all that charisma and talent, and people just can't imagine that that all went away.
Yeah, and sadly too, 42 years old is awfully young, isn't it, for that?
Oh, definitely, definitely young. You know, and Elvis, you know, he really had a hard time turning 40. And I guess, you know, trying to look back on that youth and everything. But boy, when you think about it now, any of us that went past that age of 42, we know that's not that long at all.
Joaquin Phoenix played Johnny Cash in Walk the Line, and there was a scene where after Joaquin got off the stage as Johnny Cash singing, the next guy up was Elvis Presley. Did those two cross paths?
Yes, they most definitely did. Back in the early days, they used to be on the same marquee together and do some regional and local shows together. So they definitely did know each other and tour together.
Were they friends, do you know?
It's always hard when you talk about friendships with Elvis, because Elvis wasn't your typical celebrity. He didn't hang out a lot. You know, he didn't go to a lot of parties. You didn't see him out having fancy dinners. He kind of stayed to himself, stayed at his home. So when he definitely had friends and acquaintances, but as far as, you know, friendships, Elvis had just a few friends that were around him in his inner circle. But he obviously knew these people and did hang out with them. But they weren't hanging out having dinner every night.
Let's go back to the beginning of Elvis Presley and his career. When did he start really playing around with music? As a little boy?
Well, you know what it was? When he was born in Tupelo, Mississippi, and he would go and listen to the gospel quartets, and he would go to a part of town called Shake Rag and listen to some of the black musicians. And you know, he was taught guitar by his uncle, and, you know, he'd sneak into these shows and listen to the Blackwood Brothers, and, you know, and he really got the niche for that, and singing in church. And so the music was always there with him. And then we all know the story, you know, on his 11th birthday, He wanted a BB gun, and his mom bought him a guitar.
And what a move that was by her, huh? And he adored her, didn't he?
Absolutely. I mean, his mother Gladys and Elvis were very, very close, had a very tight relationship. They said that she even used to walk him to school when he was still in high school. And sadly, when she passed away, Elvis was only, in his early 20s. He was just starting to become the Elvis that we know, and she passed away.
Way too young.
She wasn't there to see everything that Elvis was going to end up doing.
Did Elvis play a lot of music in high school? I mean, was he in a high school band or anything like that?
Well, he wasn't in a high school band. I mean, he did sing a little bit in class and, talent shows with such like that in school, but he was really kind of a loner as well. It was, it's kind of funny when you think about the day that Elvis went to Sun Records there in Memphis to make a record, they say, for his mom for her birthday, but her birthday had already passed, so a lot of us kind of theorized that maybe Elvis just kind of wanted to hear what he sounded like and was testing the waters a little bit. But he went in there and made a record for $4, and boy, if I could say, probably the best $4 that's ever been invested.
Who discovered Elvis, Corey?
Well, Sam Phillips, who owned Sun Records, is always credited with discovering Elvis. But what a lot of people might not know was the day that Elvis went into Sun Records, Sam wasn't even there that day, but his secretary, Marion Teister, was there. And she was the one that initially spoke with Elvis, and she was the one that told Sam when he came back, like, hey, you got to hear this guy, Sam, which, of course, Sam brought him back in. So Marion Teister is kind of the unsung hero in all of the Elvis history.
So when he cuts his first record, how does it get on radio stations? Who pushes it? Who promotes it?
Well, the very first record that he went in there, they did when he paid his $4, that didn't necessarily get played on the radio. But what happened was when he got the group together with Scotty Moore on guitar and Bill Blackwood on bass, stand-up bass, that's when they went into the studio. They weren't really hitting on a lot of stuff. They wasn't making the sound that Sam Phillips wanted. They finally hit on That's All Right, Mama. And then that's the record that went and got played locally there by a DJ named Dewey Phillips in Memphis, and who played the song like 12 times in a row or some outrageous number. And Elvis was too nervous to even want to hear it, so he went to a movie theater, and they had to go find Elvis and tell him that it's being played and everybody's loving it. And so that was like the first springboard into everybody's ears to hear Elvis. But of course, that was just local there in Memphis, and of course it went crazy after that.
When he got on the Ed Sullivan Show, was he already well known, or was it that TV show that really propelled him?
No, because 1956, in September 56, was that first Ed Sullivan appearance. Elvis had been signed to RCA Records. They bought his contract from Sam Phillips at Sun. And Elvis, that was a huge year. I mean, Elvis had already been on a stage show with the Dorsey Brothers, and he'd already been on, everybody knew he was on the radar for sure. And so he'd already had his first number one hit with Heartbreak Hotel, and so he was already on his way to superstardom at that point.
And then once he hit the Ed Sullivan Show, it just pushed him way over the top, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. And the great thing that Ed Sullivan did is after Elvis's third and final appearance, he even said to the audience that, look, this was a fine, decent young boy because of all the controversy that had surrounded Elvis. And that was an amazing shot of confidence for Elvis to get that from Ed Sullivan.
It was a great endorsement.
Probably solidified a little bit of parents to calm their fears a little bit.
Were Sullivan's directors during that show saying, you can't shoot him below the waist, don't do any of that because of his gyrations?
Yeah, and that was only on the third and final show that they did. Everybody thinks it was all three appearances, but it was just the third and final show that they did that to Elvis.
People went nuts. Those girls went crazy, didn't they?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I mean, you see him crying and falling over and passing out.
And how old would he have been during that time period, Corey?
He was 21 years old.
Oh, my God, just a young guy.
21 years old.
My gosh. At what point did he really become a superstar in Vegas? How old was he?
Well, Vegas was kind of a double-edged sword for Elvis because they initially brought Elvis out for some shows at the New Frontier in the 50s, and it didn't really go that well for Elvis at that point. you know, the audiences were older audiences. They really didn't get that type of music, and it wasn't all that great of a showing for him. But what made him into the pinnacle of that superstardom in Vegas is 13 years later when he started appearing back in Vegas in 1969. And then that's, of course, what's kind of synonymous with the image of Elvis with the jumpsuits and all the live footage that we see. A lot of that's from those shows.
And he was just absolutely huge. And, of course, he was picking up after the Frank Sinatra era. He was basically the new breed of singers then, wasn't he?
Absolutely, you know, and nobody was like him, of course, which, you know, and I mean, that's the greatest thing about Elvis. You know, there's so many aspects of him that were amazing. I mean, he was the American dream, American success story. Nobody looked like him. Nobody sounded like him. Nobody had that showmanship and charisma like him. I mean, there was just so many aspects that stood out above everybody else. And, of course, all of which fueled the teenagers even more when their hysteria over Elvis and made all the parents groan.
It was an incredible time period during all of that. I even remember on YouTube seeing a duet that he sang with Frank Sinatra.
Yeah, well, that was a great show because Elvis was had 6 minutes of time on that show and was paid $125,000.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and that was in 1960, and what had happened is Frank Sinatra was doing a show from the Fountain Blue in Florida and brought Elvis on to sing a little duet, but it was also Elvis's like first big show after he got released from the military in 1960.
When did the movies start for him, Corey?
Well, he did. He did a few. The first movies, you know, he did in the 50s, 1956, when Love Me Tender first came out, which was initially titled The Reno Brothers, but then Love Me Tender, the single, was out at the time, so of course they wanted to capitalize on the marketing aspect of that and renamed it Love Me Tender. And then, of course, he did Loving You, Jailhouse Rock, and then King Creole, which he had to, at that time when they began to film that, Elvis had already now gotten his draft papers to go in the Army. They actually had to give him a 60-day extension so he could finish the movie. But so when then Elvis came out in 1960, that's really when his manager, Colonel Parker, kicked it in gear with those movie contracts. And then for the next 8-9 years there in the 60s, Elvis didn't do any live performances and was basically churning out like three of those movies a year.
He did Viva Las Vegas. That was a big hit too, wasn't it?
They, you know, that was a great thing too about those movies. A lot of people, you know, wanted to pan those movies, but hey, we got to see Elvis, and Elvis never had a flop. Every single one of those movies made a profit. It's just that they took those profits and went and made bigger and better movies with all-star casts, and sadly Elvis didn't get the roles that he wanted.
Corey, tell us about Colonel Parker. How did that relationship with Elvis occur?
Well, Parker had already been managing like Hank Snow and Eddie Arnold and got word about Elvis and went and saw a show, and of course he was never going to not want to be Elvis's manager, so Elvis talked with him and spoke with his parents, and they all got together and struck a deal that would go until the day Elvis passed away.
How tight was Colonel Parker with Elvis? I mean, did he rule him with a dictatorial hand?
Well, he did and didn't. You know, Colonel Parker is a double-edged sword because, in my opinion, just as much good that he did for Elvis, he did just as much bad, which was even evident
in
the court cases against Colonel Parker after Elvis passed away, where it was shown that he overextended his management skills with Elvis on numerous occasions.
I remember a time, I'm going to jump around a little bit here, but I remember when something was wrong with Elvis, he ballooned up in terms of weight. He was just huge. And I remember a Vegas video of him singing, and he was incoherent, drunk or on drugs or something. What was wrong with him at that point? And then he lost his weight again and looked pretty good, didn't he?
Well, Elvis didn't drink alcohol. Alcoholism was in his family a lot, and Elvis was not fond of alcohol. But sadly, Elvis did have a problem with prescribed legal medications, which should be a great warning to anybody out there that, Elvis was under the impression they're prescribed by a doctor, so everything's okay. And as we know, that's not the case at all. They're just as dangerous as any other drug. But, you know, Elvis, because of taking those opiate drugs, had a lot of intestinal problems. And that's why a lot of times you'd see Elvis, you know, the weight gain, the bloat, the face, things like that, was because of those type problems with taking those medications. That's also why you would see Elvis a few weeks later, it looked like he'd lost a lot of weight. But Elvis only gained a lot of weight in the last 2 or 3 years of his life. So sometimes I know that, that the media likes to print and make it sound like Elvis had a weight problem his entire career, which
he did not.
Obviously is not true.
No, he was a good-looking guy and, you know, kept that for a long time, slipped for a little bit. But did he not lose his weight toward the end of his career?
Well, Elvis was...
or did he balloon
pretty,
up?
He was pretty heavy when he passed away.
He was, okay.
Yeah. I mean, but it certainly wasn't to the extent of some of the numbers that you see reported. I mean, I've seen numbers that's just absolutely ridiculous, saying that he weighed like 350 pounds, and he wasn't anywhere near that number.
Was he still performing, you know, before he died?
He was. June 26, 1977 was his last concert in Indianapolis, Market Square Arena, and just 6 weeks later, sadly, he passed away.
So
and,
his,
he was, and the day he passed away, he was about to embark on another tour that was going to start out in Portland, Maine.
So his death was sudden. He really didn't have any symptoms, or had he had problems, and we just didn't know about it?
Well, you know, we didn't have all these social outlets back then for everybody to know everybody's business about celebrities like we do now. But sadly, Elvis had had problems on and off for a long time, and anybody in the inner circle all knew, you know, what they were being caused from. It's just that the public didn't necessarily always know what was going on with that. But sadly, it never got handled.
Corey, yeah, why didn't anybody stop him?
Well, they tried. But Elvis was Elvis, and Elvis was very stubborn. And Elvis had a way that, you know, he'd only take so much. And if you keep hounding him about something, he would just fire you. But he would also hire everybody back, for the most part. But you know, but that's the way Elvis was, and he really felt that he needed those medications, and so it's sad that it took his life.
He was generous, was he not?
Very, very generous. In fact, one of the most amazing stories, I think, that doesn't get told a lot is the fact that the USS Arizona Memorial in Pearl Harbor was finished because of Elvis. The State Parks Department didn't have the money to finish the memorial, and Elvis did a couple of charity concerts and donated all the proceeds so that could be done.
I always heard rumors, Corey, that he was part of the CIA. What was that all about?
Yeah, that's what I like to call them, the Alivers, and their conspiracy theories that try to say that that's why Elvis is still alive and had to fake his death, because he had to go into witness protection because of his ties to the CIA, and all, of course, is, you know, not based on any fact at all, because it didn't happen. But what they try to make the connection to was there was a group of men that were going around shafting people out of investment money over airplanes, and they try to make that connection that Elvis had something to do with them, and that he had people implanted in his band that were trying to find out things, and then it was all a bunch of nonsense, but they like to use this to say that that's why Elvis had to fake his death, because he had mafia hits on him. And, you know, there's no truth, no basis in fact at all.
Here we are 40 years since he died, and his name is still going strong, isn't it?
Definitely. I mean, you can't go a week without hearing, seeing some kind of reference to Elvis. I mean, it's amazing. You'll turn on the TV and it'll have something that has absolutely nothing to do with Elvis or music, and somebody will mention his name or a song will be playing in the background.
I mean, we'll still play a bumper song every once in a while. I mean, it just, he lives forever when it comes to that.
He certainly does, you know, and you know, 40 years later, there's every once in a while there'll still be some kind of new alternate recording that comes out, or some kind of new footage that the estate will put out there, you know, trying to keep something out there fresh for the fans that they've never seen or heard before.
Is the estate making money, Corey?
Oh, yeah, the estate's still going strong. They just opened up a brand-new 450-room hotel across the street from Graceland called the Guest House, and it's like a whole giant entertainment center. Which
the estate owns it?
The estate owns it, which is probably doing very, very well this week, considering this is Elvis week. And it's just opened just a few months ago, and they have every kind of museum and everything across the street there. It's a whole giant complex that they've done.
Stay with us. We're coming back for more with Corey Cooper as we talk about the life of Elvis Presley right here on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking about the life of Elvis Presley. 40 years ago, he died. Corey Cooper with us. Corey's website, ElvisExpert.com, linked up at CoastToCoastAM.com as well. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Corey Cooper with us as we talk about the life of Elvis Presley as we celebrate the anniversary. 40 years ago today, he passed away. Did he ever live in the Los Angeles area, Corey, or did he spend his time primarily at Graceland?
Well, his primary residence was Graceland, of course, but no, Elvis had numerous homes in the Southern California area, in Bel Air, Beverly Hills, Palm Springs. He had four or five different homes over the years.
You say he did not go out often, so he wasn't one of those types. Like Sinatra loved to be seen in public at restaurants and nightclubs and places like that. Elvis was more of a hermit, wasn't he?
Yeah, and a lot of that, I mean, it wasn't because, you know, a lot of people like to say, you know, he was a prisoner of his own fame, and to a certain extent he was, but, you know, Elvis still went out and did what he wanted to do when he wanted to do it. I think that was one reason why he stayed in Memphis, because he probably had a little bit more freedom there than he would, you know, in Bel Air.
Tell me about the Memphis Mafia. Who are they?
Well, the Memphis Mafia was the group of friends that Elvis would hire that protected him. There was his inner circle. They were always around him. I mean, there was, you know, always something that needed to be done for Elvis. There was always some job to do, and of course, he needed protection. And you know, it's funny, during the break, I was just thinking, sadly, you know, they're all getting to that age that so many of them have passed away. And just in the last year or so, there's been four or five members of the Memphis Mafia that's passed away, and then two of the most famous, Red and Sonny West, who were cousins. They passed away within 2 months of each other.
Oh, geez.
A couple months ago. And it's just amazing. It's just, you know, everybody's getting up in that age, and they're all going. And now all these fantastic firsthand accounts of all this history with Elvis is all, it's all going to be gone.
Elvis would be 82 as well, would he not?
Absolutely.
Would he still be singing, do you think?
You know, I think Elvis would have never totally left show business. I think, obviously, he couldn't have kept up with the touring schedule that he was doing. But I think Elvis would have finally got some of those meatier acting roles he would have liked. I think Elvis would have done a lot of music producing. Elvis had a great ear for the music. And I think he would have done a lot of producing and an occasional show here and there. Like, he definitely would have kept his hand in it.
I do a song at my live events, Can't Help Falling in Love, Corey. And it's fun for me to do that, and I even get some emails afterwards. People said, you are lip-syncing Elvis.
That's a great tune, and that's the song Elvis always ended his concerts with in the 70s.
He was one of a kind, and he had a kind heart, though, as we were talking about his generosity. I mean, remember those stories about he would give away pink Cadillacs to people?
Well, I mean, Elvis was just amazing in the things that he'd do. I mean, Elvis would read a newspaper, he'd hear somebody's in dire straits, you know, and he would send him a check. You know, there was a lady one time that needed a wheelchair. She actually was using roller skates to get around her house.
Oh, my gosh.
And Elvis at that time went and got the most expensive, best wheelchair you could possibly get and hand-delivered it to her. You know, the Cadillacs, giving away the cars. You know, there's a documentary out called 200 Cadillacs, which is the estimated number of Cadillacs that Elvis bought during his lifetime. And on one such shopping spree, there was a lady that was looking at one of the Cadillacs, and Elvis had just purchased it. And he told her, he said, well, he goes, you can't have that one, I just bought it, but you can have this one. And he bought her a Cadillac. You know, and she was just walking down the street. And then on top of it, he gives her $500 because he said, now you have a new car. You need to go get some new wardrobe. So here's $500.
I love it. Did he have a temper at all, Corey?
Oh, yes.
Elvis, he did.
He had a temper. But like I said, you know, he would fly off the handle, fire people, but he'd always hire him back. He was very loyal. But, gosh, you got to think of the tremendous pressure it must have been to be Elvis. I mean, you know, look what we do in our own lives. We get stressed out. We have anxiety. Can you imagine all the people that were employed because of Elvis and the enormous pressures and deadlines and recording and touring and everything that he had to do? you know, it's amazing.
Well, when he went into the service, I remember the video and the film of him getting his hair cut and, you know, all the crooners just going crazy. But he did his part. He did his part for America, didn't he?
He absolutely did. He wanted no special treatment. He wanted to do what every other soldier was going to do. He could have absolutely went into a music division and just for 2 years just went from base to base playing music and entertaining the troops, but he didn't do that. He never sang and did one show at all during his two-year stint. And he wanted to be like everybody else. He pulled watch and did everything.
Will there ever be another Elvis Presley?
Nah, George, there can't be. Because what Elvis did, that one single point in time could never be accomplished again. To make that breakthrough in music, to make that impact in music, and be that historical at the time, it could just never be done again. I mean, just about everything that's been done in music has already been done. So you can never have that pivotal point again to have another Elvis Presley.
What would he say about music today?
Well, you know, Elvis used to say, you know, he was pretty liberal when it came to other artists and such. So I'm sure there would be stuff he would like and some they might not as much. But, you know, he wasn't too jealous when it came to other artists. A little bit with the Beatles he was for a while, but he even came to like them and understood their importance and talent and actually recorded four or five Beatles songs. But, you know, he knew there was enough to go around for everybody.
Did he know the Beach Boys?
You know, I don't know if that's a good one. You've actually got me on that one, George. I don't know if he ever met any of the Beach Boys. I would have to say at some point maybe he did, but I don't know in the Beach Boys.
I ran into Mike Love in St. Louis back in April of this year. He was here for some reason with his wife, and I put him in touch with Russ Regan, who discovered the Beach Boys. They were called originally the Pendletons. They named themselves after a shirt, and Russ said, "Oh no, that name's not going to last." And he called them the Beach Boys. But I put them in touch with each other. They hadn't spoken with each other. I should have asked him about Elvis, because that would have been a kick to see if they really knew each other and what they thought of each other.
You know, I see Mike Love once in a while because he lives near us up in Tahoe, and so the next time I see him somewhere, I'll have to pose that question.
Yeah, that would be something, and then tell him I said hi from St. Louis. That was fun. The music that Elvis composed, did he write it, most of it, or did people do that for him?
No, Elvis didn't write any of his music.
And he did not, okay.
I know sometimes that's a bone of contention with a lot of people, but, you know, anybody that says that doesn't realize how the music business works. I mean, most artists don't write all their own material, if any at all. And there's always a team of songwriters. That's why everybody that's a songwriter moves to Nashville.
That's right. Not everybody's like Paul Anka, for example.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, Elvis got a little bit of credit on a few songs. You'll see his name listed as a writer, but that was just done for royalty purposes on a few records. But, you know, Elvis didn't write anything. But like I was saying earlier with the producing, Elvis had that perfect ear and knew what to do with a song and what to be needed to be changed and everything. So I really think he would have been great as a producer.
Who did he idolize as a musician?
Well, he liked Roy Hamilton. He liked Jackie Wilson.
Chuck Berry?
Chuck Berry. He liked anybody that was in gospel he liked. He was big. You know, in fact, the only Grammys that Elvis Presley ever won, here's the King of Rock and Roll, and all three Grammys he won was for gospel music.
Really?
Isn't that amazing?
That is amazing.
And only nominated 14 times. Kind of makes you wonder about what's going on with the Grammys when you see performers out there today that win five or six in one show.
Did he ever get nominated for an Oscar for his movie roles?
No. He got a Golden Globe for one of his documentaries, Elvis on Tour, from 1972, but that was it.
And, of course, he dated some incredible women, superstars. He did a movie with Anne Margaret and married Priscilla, of course. Seems like he was a decent guy.
Yeah, and he really was. I mean, I've been researching and been in this business for 40 years with Elvis, and and you will be hard pressed to find anybody that he worked with, co-stars, other musicians, that have anything bad to say about Elvis, because he just really was the kind Southern gentleman who always had his manners and said yes sir and yes ma'am, and he really was that person.
What was it, Corey, that captured you? How did you get involved in all this?
You know, I was a little kid. I saw him, heard him somewhere, and it just stood out. I remember my mom bought me an album, and my mom and all her side of the family was in the music business, so I was always around music. And he just stood out. And then when I got older enough to comprehend what he was all about and learn the history of him, I just devoured everything I could.
When he died, were you crushed?
Yeah, because I was only 9 years old when he passed away, and I never got the chance to see him live.
Yeah, I never saw him live either. I saw him a lot on television. I always remember him coming out in that white outfit of his. And that Vegas-looking outfit, and it was almost like Liberace outfits. What got him to start dressing that way?
Well, you know, when he went back to the live performing in 1969 in Vegas, he wanted to have an outfit that he could move in, and it would move with him, and it would be comfortable. So he kind of modeled it, the suit, sort of after like a karate gi, and. You know, so that's what he liked, you know. And of course, if you see the early ones, 69, 70, 71, they're not quite as lavish as the later ones. They, a lot of them have a little bit of macrame, the belt, a little fringe here and there, but they're mainly white. And then later on, you'll see more of the different colored rhinestones and different patterns and things like that. But he wanted something he could move in and do his dance moves. You know, he did a lot of karate moves on stage to the songs, and he wanted to be comfortable.
He was one of the first celebs to have the polio vaccine, wasn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. That's another little known fact about Elvis. When Dr. Jonas Salk was researching the polio vaccine, Elvis is one of the first celebrities to ever endorse the research for it, and Elvis was the first celebrity to ever be inoculated with a polio vaccine.
No ramifications from the vaccine, I guess.
Absolutely not, and that's why Elvis did it. He wanted to show, hey, it's safe, I'm getting it done, and wanted people to realize how important it was.
Did he have best friends in the business?
He had very limited, you know, he like we were speaking earlier.
He really was an introvert, wasn't he?
Yeah, he basically wanted to just surround himself with the people that he knew, that he grew up with, went to high school with. A lot of the people that he employed, he was in the military with, and that's what he did. He surrounded himself with family and friends. He wanted that little nucleus. But it also didn't mean that Elvis wasn't open to meeting new people. I mean, you know, Elvis was infamous to go down to the gates of Graceland or even to his homes in Southern California and go down and talk to total strangers and invite them up to the house, invite them right on in and give them lunch, watch TV. Sing for him, tell him stories, read stories to him. I mean, he was very accessible and open that way, something that obviously can't be done nowadays if you're a celebrity.
Yet in Vegas, he would do his show and then just disappear, I guess, right?
Well, and you got to think, too, absolutely. I mean, you know, he'd go up to the 30th floor suite and just be exhausted. And Elvis was on a schedule where he would do two shows a night. Sometimes a third show he would do at 3 a.m. that would be for all the employees and the people that couldn't see him during the times of the other shows. And so you got to think he's putting 100% of everything into every one of those shows and doing two or three a night like that, you know, and getting Vegas throat, as they would call it, with the dryness out there and just putting it all out like that. I mean, this has been heard of. I don't think you're going to see any performer doing a 3 a.m. show in Vegas.
Corey, was he medicated?
Well, sadly, he was from time to time, and you know, a lot of pain type medications, a lot of things to go to sleep, and then of course I'd have to take something to stay awake, and you know, a lot of medications like that.
You know that clip I'm talking about where he seemed incoherent when he was singing, I think, "Are You Lonesome Tonight," or that may have been the song.
That's actually that's from 1977, I believe, is the clip that you're thinking of. There's one where he's sitting at a piano as well, and. You know, forgetting the words of the songs, or he'd have to read off the paper a little bit. And, you know, the amazing thing with all that, as sick as he was and under those medications, his voice was just as strong as ever.
It was strong, and it seemed like even though he messed up the words or forgot them or mumbled them, the audience, when he hit his notes, still applauded. They went wild.
No, absolutely. I mean, Elvis could do no wrong in their eyes. And, of course, you know, many might have suspected, but, you know, people just didn't know what was going on with him, too. You know, it was only a little sprinkle here and there sometimes with a critic that would review a show or something that something might be in the media. Or maybe once in a while, Rona Barrett from the tabloid or something would have something in there. But it wasn't much. So a lot of everything with Elvis was a shock when he passed away for a lot of fans to learn.
Corey, if you were to have met Elvis before he passed, what would you have asked him?
You know, I'd just ask him if he want to go play some racquetball and hang out. That was one of his favorite sports. I just would have just been neat just to hear him talk, just to stand there and hear him talk and just see what he was all about in person.
He had one child?
One child, Lisa Marie.
Where is she now?
She spends her time between Memphis and Southern California as well. She did live in England for a while, but I'm not sure if she is still going over there or not.
She's part of the estate, I take it?
Yes. In 2005, she sold off an 85% stake in Elvis Presley Enterprises, but that was only for the image and likeness rights. She still 100% owns Graceland and the property, and all of Elvis's effects and everything that's there is all hers.
And Priscilla Presley, is she still around?
Priscilla's still around. She still has her hand in the day-to-day businesses of Graceland.
Were they married when he died?
No. They had divorced in 72, or in 73 became official, and Elvis passed away 4 years later.
And he was only married once, right?
Just the one time to Priscilla for about 6 years. But they still remained close. They still had talked all the time. They were still friends. They just couldn't be married.
Interesting take. Well, stay with us, Corey. We're going to come back in just a moment with our final hour here on Coast to Coast AM. And we're going to take phone calls for you. The lines are already jammed, as a matter of fact, as we talk about the life of Elvis Presley, this being the 40th anniversary. He passed away on August 16th, which is what it is now, 1977, 40 years ago. Wow, how time flies. If you were around then, you probably remember where you were.